with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're locked and loaded here on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Will Hill, in for Michael Lombardi, who's making the trip back home from Seattle. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We've got a great hour two of the program lined up. Coming up in a little bit, a couple of great guests. We'll have Andy Vasquez stop by, Jets beat reporter, get the lowdown on the Hassan Reddick trade request. How has Aaron Rodgers been looking at camp after getting just four snaps last year? Very high expectations for the team in New York, and a little college football talk as well. Thor Nystrom, college football analyst, Fantasy Life, going to help us break down the AP top 25 and some bets that he likes early on this season. But we are going to start with some big news in the NFL here. Will, as we led off the show with in hour one, unfortunate news for Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy, who had a great showing in his initial preseason game, really looked like he had come to form through that early interception, but the rest of the way was fantastic. Had some knee soreness over the weekend, and it turns out that that is a meniscus tear, according to head coach Kevin O'Connell. Said he's going to miss some time, does need knee surgery, just not sure the extent of what that surgery will entail just yet.
Yeah, and I feel like you know more about this than I do in terms of the remedies here, but there's two options where there's a trim and then there's a full repair. The trim is a few weeks. The repair is months. And if it is the repair, I mean, we probably aren't going to see him much, if at all, this season. I don't know the betting angle because we're going to see Darnold for week one through probably the first half of the season. And then, hey, if things aren't going well, then we hand over the keys to McCarthy and we get him ready for year two. So if nothing else, if you're Minnesota, hey, we wanted to get him some reps second half of the season. Get him ready for week two. Maybe we could take off, even if we don't think we're contenders this year. So, look, it's a bummer. He looks good. If you're the Vikings, you just feel like there's a black cloud over your head with Cousins getting hurt. Remember Teddy Bridgewater got hurt time? Well, it had to be 8 years ago now. It's incredible. That's 8 years ago. Led to the Bradford trade. But it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And it's why we talk about all summer, hey, the unders are the better way to go, whether it's team wins where injuries help you, player passing yards, player props where it's fun to talk about, hey, this guy's going to break records and throw for touchdowns and throw for yards. It's a violent game. People get hurt, and unders are just a better way to go than overs. I don't know how it changes things for Minnesota this year, big picture, because I think Darnold was going to play anyway, but certainly bad news is these quarterbacks look good. All the rookie quarterbacks look good. McCarthy, Daniels, Caleb Williams, you go down the line, so it's tough to lose one right away like this.
Yeah, still odd they didn't give Drake May more of a chance to actually get some reps out there on the field and do something. But yes, a lot of those rookie quarterbacks did impress in their initial preseason debuts. For the Vikings, though, you said it, not particularly high expectations. It's going to be Sam Darnold, who was the presumptive starter anyway. The rest of that quarterback room right now, Nick Mullins, Jaren Hall, as J.J. McCarthy looks to get healthy. Win total for the Minnesota Vikings, sitting at 6.5, long shot in the division at 10-1. We might have to bring this up with Thor, though, as well later on in the show when he joins us at 11:30 Pacific, 2:30 Eastern, because he was all in on the J.J. McCarthy train, thinks that he's going to be a tremendous pro. Another update that we got moments ago, we talked about at the end of hour one, 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk has been a talking point throughout this entire offseason as he tries to negotiate for a new deal, whether that be in San Francisco or elsewhere. And according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, the Steelers and 49ers do have a potential trade in place. We'll see if it actually happens. I feel like we had very similar rumors and conversation last week with not only the Steelers, but a handful of other teams. 49ers reporter for NBC Sports Bay Area, Matt Maiocco, did reinforce the fact that you have to remember the Steelers would have to give up compensation to the 49ers in a trade and give Brandon Ayuk the contract that he desires. The 49ers themselves have an offer out to Ayuk that he has not liked so far for a long-term deal. So we'll see how things shake out. But as you said last segment, like, just hit me up when we know something, because right now this is just an annoying conversation topic.
Yeah, we're on like chapter six of this this chapter saga. I hate to bring this up. It reminds me of trying to make plans with you when you come to Connecticut for your ESPN stuff, or I'm out to Vegas. Hey, we should be. Oh, I'm busy this time. There are some similarities there. Very, very reminiscent.
Words hurt, Will. And first and foremost, I would like to let it be known that when I was out there in ESPN last week, so I went out to Bristol. It was my first time out there. I've worked at ESPN as a college football reporter for 4 years. I had never been there. But it's my first time out there. And I swear, aside from the meetings that I was in, I did not leave the hotel. So just don't blame. I'm a homebody, okay? Let me live. I'm about to gear up for football season. I am sad I didn't get any good restaurants. I wish I would have hit you up. I wish I would have hit Chris Felica up. But I was tired and I napped a lot. I did my meetings and I napped.
Ayuk is your new nickname. We can move on.
Wow. Some people. Okay, let's move on to, you know, hopefully happier things like quarterback competitions. Who doesn't love those? One of them is going to be here in the city of Las Vegas as the Raiders try to figure out whether or not Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew is going to be QB1 this year. Antonio Pierce said he will announce the starting quarterback after their second preseason game coming up against the Cowboys this Saturday. Here is head coach Antonio Pierce on the topic.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, good reps there for Aiden. Backed up, drove all the way down the length of the field. It's close there. Was thinking about going from a fourth down, negative play. We kicked the field goal. And then Gardner came in. Three good drives. I mean, really for those both quarterbacks, all four possessions led to points on the board for the Raiders. So that was positive. There's a lot of things, obviously, we could learn from it. You know, like to see it a little bit better in the running game for us, of course. But I thought the quarterbacks responded well.
What's your sense of this quarterback competition right now, Will?
We lean towards O'Connell. I do think there's a human. First of all, he's younger and he played well at times, I thought, down the stretch last year. And I just think there's a human element here where Pierce got the Raider job, kept the Raider job because they won games late in the season. Part of the reason they won games late in the season was O'Connell. Now you say he managed the game, Kansas City didn't have to do much, but look, he won games. His stats were not that bad. So I think the fact that he's younger, I think there's the tiebreaker of, hey, there's some loyalty where this guy helped me get this job, keep this job. When in doubt, go with that. And plus, you can always bring in Minshew off the bench. He's used to being a backup. He's serviceable, but he is what he is. I think they'll go with the younger guy who's been there, who helped Pierce keep the job. I think O'Connell is plus money, and these books are careful about keeping these lines up this late to opening day because you could get caught with your pants down where news comes up and you just get buried on it and people are able to fire in bets and beat you to the information. So these markets pop up and down. I would lean towards O'Connell. Where do you stand with this?
I think that there is a growing sense internally that Antonio Pierce just likes Aiden O'Connell and got to know him a lot back end of last year when he became the interim head coach. That's the guy that he believed in and turned over the reins to. So I do understand that thought process. It is interesting, though, when you look at the betting odds on DraftKings right now, I do see O'Connell as -105. So obviously the better number available to Gardner Minshew, -125, -130-ish right now. But I mean, they did pay Gardner Minshew on a two-year $25 million deal to come over here as well. So I think it's interesting. I feel like their numbers last year were relatively similar, except Gardner Minshew probably had a slightly better QBR. But it's an interesting thing. I feel like I'm in agreement with you simply because for whatever reason, whether it's deservedly so or not, from a talent standpoint, I feel like AP has an affinity for Aiden O'Connell.
If he didn't, they probably would have drafted a quarterback. Now you could say, hey, they got beat to the punch and they weren't expecting Penix to go eighth and Bo Nix to go as high as he went. And maybe they just got beat to the punch there. But still, you had other opportunities to draft quarterbacks after that or with your pick. And they went with Bowers. And again, not that many guys were left. So maybe that's a factor. But I just think the loyalty factor is the tiebreaker here where I go with O'Connell.
Preseason week two, the Raiders are up from a 3.5-point favorite to now 7 against the Cowboys, total sitting 39.5. A couple other quarterback battles of interest right now. The Broncos, Bo Nix certainly put his stake in that conversation. Despite Jared Stidham getting the start in preseason game one, Bo Nix had a tremendous performance. He will start the second preseason game this coming Sunday against the Packers. And then we also have everything that's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers right now and Justin Fields, who has been trying, you would think on the surface, to take advantage of an opportunity where Russell Wilson's been held out with a calf, had a couple fumbles, took a couple sacks in that preseason initial game. Any early thoughts about those two quarterback battles and where things sit?
I would lay it with Nix. I saw one book had Nix -200 yesterday. I laid it. I thought that was cheap.
That was what, $4?
Yeah, and I guess it was because Stidham was listed one on the depth chart and he started the first game. I get the sense, kind of reading between the lines here, and Lombardi would be a good guy to have information on this because he's close to the league and he's got sources, but you get the sense, unless Nix gets hurt, it's his team. They did pick him, 12th? You're not going to pick him 12th and say, hey, you're going to sit. I guess they could, but it just feels like it's Nick's team. And if you read the comments from Peyton about his draft workout, about everything, hey, he brings the backpack and it's all got football stuff. And we didn't like his workout. We loved his workout. Sounds like they're going to give him the keys. And plus, he was pretty impressive. He looked comfortable. He's had plenty of college experience. I think the -200, even the -300 is cheap. Now, most people aren't going to want to lay that kind of price and say, hey, if he gets hurt, I'm screwed. Yeah, you know what? If he gets hurt, that's the risk you take. But I think unless he got hurt, he's going to be the starter. I like Nix. The other one, I'm not sure. it'll probably be Wilson, similar to the Raiders situation where when in doubt, or a little different because when in doubt, you just go to the veteran here as opposed to the younger player because Wilson's more established in this case than in the Raiders situation. And again, I'm not a Fields guy. I know he's got his apologists and it's always somebody else's fault. Hey, the right tackle got beat or it's the offensive line, it's a receiver. I just think you hit on it perfectly. He takes too many sacks. He fumbles too much. If Wilson flames out and you say, you know what? He had a great career, but it's over for him. You can always bring Fields off the bench. I don't know Wilson with his reputation for being, let's face it, high maintenance, a diva. I just don't know. You're going to start Fields and put Wilson on the bench. I feel like you'll lose Wilson, and that could be an issue where it's easier to go from Wilson to Fields. Now, if Wilson's not ready to go physically, that's another story. But again, if Wilson's healthy, I think it's his job.
Yeah, I think 100% that's my thought process. It is so much easier if you're Mike Tomlin to go from giving Russell Wilson the reins from the get-go and then turning things over to Justin Fields versus starting out with Fields. I 100% think that that's going to be the easiest course of action for Tomlin and the Steelers.
I would not want that personality of Russell Wilson as the backup quarterback in my life. I just think that that's asking for trouble.
Win total for the Pittsburgh Steelers, 8.5. And we all know that one lovely stat about Mike Tomlin. Will it happen year? Will it not? I'm not even going to say it. It's like Voldemort. Just keep it out of your mouth. We're not saying it anymore. But with that in mind, one of the most difficult schedules in the entire National Football League, especially the back end of the year. How will they be able to hold up? Very challenging division as well. Quarterback battle still ongoing. We'll see when we get a little Russell Wilson action for the first time, though. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, continuing the NFL conversation with Andy Vasquez, covers the Jets very closely for the Star Ledger. Get the lowdown on Hassan Reddick's trade request and the response from the Jets general manager, as well as a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Michael will be back with us tomorrow. Excited to have Will Hill sitting in that chair, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. It's great things with us here at VSiN. I'm Stormy Bonatoni as we welcome you back to hour two of the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network. Let's talk a little New York Jets here, as the news over the last 24 hours is that edge rusher who got traded to the team back in April, Hassan Reddick, has officially requested a trade from the organization despite not having stepped a foot on a practice field or game yet. Just continues to rack up fines after fines. And general manager Joe Douglas was very quick to respond himself and say, sorry, Hassan, we are not going to trade you. To help us get the load on that and all things New York Jets, we welcome in Andy Vasquez on the Progressive Gets Line, Jets reporter for the Star Ledger at @Andy_Vasquez on X. I think the big question here, Andy, right now is just, how did we get to this point? How did the Jets bring Reddick over here without pen to paper on a deal in the first place? And how does this thing end?
Yeah, it's a strange situation. I think, you know, my assumption throughout the offseason and even early in training camp before it became clear this was going to be a thing was that both sides needed a deal to get done. I mean, the Jets need Reddick because they've lost a ton of production from their edge rushers from last year. They've lost two starters. And Reddick obviously needs the Jets, if not only for short-term money, but if he has any chance at a long-term deal, if it's not with the Jets, he has to play this year. So my assumption, and I think a lot of people's assumption, was that something would get done because of that. And clearly the Jets don't seem to feel the same way in terms of them needing Reddick. I mean, you look at that statement yesterday, it's pretty clear, like, the Jets are only going to do negotiations with him on their own terms, which is him showing up to camp, which has been widely reported. So that's what they want before they negotiate with him. They're not going to negotiate with a player who's not in camp. So that statement from Joe Douglas made it clear where the Jets stand. And as to me, and not everybody feels this way, but from my standpoint, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to trade for a guy who's only on the market because he wants a new contract and then basically be unwilling to negotiate with him or you know, be unwilling to really budge off the way you want it because of what he may or may not have indicated, not put on paper, they wanted to do. So I think it's just, you know, to me, I think the Jets do need Reddick. I think their defense can be very good without him, but it's going to be a lot to overcome. And I think they're kind of playing with fire here. But again, they obviously don't feel the same way if you look at their public comments and that statement from Joe Douglas.
Andy, it's interesting because Reddick is about to be 30, and if he doesn't play this year, Jets still own his rights. So it seems like the Jets have some leverage here. Would you agree with that? And how do you think this ultimately plays out here?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have the leverage, and I mean, there's no doubt about that because his contract will toll, and he'll come back to the Jets next year without getting any of the $14.25 million he was owed. So they certainly have the leverage, but again, they traded for a guy who wanted a new contract. So there's a difference between like winning the contract or winning the Super Bowl or being a winning team. And like the Jets can easily win this contract negotiation and make life miserable on Reddick. But if they get him to play, what kind of player is he going to be? What is this team going to be like without him? What is the message that's going to send to any other player in the future who maybe wants to be a part of this team? Now, if the Jets are good enough to overcome it, none of it will matter. That's kind of how they are treating this. But I would remind you, the Jets have the longest playoff drought in American professional sports. Not like things have gone well for them. This could ultimately backfire in a spectacular way and define Joe Douglas's legacy here. So they have the leverage for sure. And if and they're clearly betting that Hassan Reddick is going to blink. But if he doesn't, it's going to be a strange, messy situation. I mean, it's already a strange situation. Who are we kidding? But it's at this point, it's hard to predict how it's going to go because this has gone so much further than anybody really could have imagined it going, because it just doesn't make sense from a lot of standpoints. So I don't know what's next, but yeah, I mean, I think it's possible that Reddick blinks. Maybe the Jets make a slight concession and start negotiations. I think that would be the wise thing to do and get something done because I think they need him. But it also could go the other way and you're looking at a Le'Veon Bell type situation and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, it's a weird situation, but again, I don't understand trading for a guy who wants a new contract and then not negotiating with him.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like everybody knew what they were getting into when they signed him. Andy Vasquez, Jets reporter, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And you mentioned that playoff drought. I'm sure Jets fans are very well aware of how long it's been. And the guy that they think can pull them out of the abyss is Aaron Rodgers. I know you talked to him moments ago on the podium. When it comes to his health right now, coming back from the Achilles last year, where does he feel as we enter week two of the preseason getting set for the year?
Yeah, a few weeks ago when the Jets reported, actually, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, a week into practice, he said that he's still getting that comfortability with the Achilles. And you know, he's physically, it's like all the way back, but it's like being able to test it. So he said he was 95% in that confidence. And today he said he was about 98%. And they joked, you know, I think I have an extra gear. I'm not sure how much of an extra gear. But they had a crazy long practice day, longest practice of camp. It'll probably end up being the longest practice of camp, about 2.5 hours. I think he threw 31 passes. Very busy day for him. And he said, the days like this make me feel like I'm ready. So he had some plays where he was scrambling. Obviously, his own teammates aren't going to hit him. Although he joked that the way the offense did today, he has to worry about his own defense hitting him the next couple of days. Because they had a really good day. It was the best the offense has looked throughout camp, the best Rodgers has looked throughout camp. And I think what you're seeing physically from Rodgers is that he looks a lot like he did pre-Achilles. I think there's still like some movement restriction, or you can still see that he's maybe second guessing, or when guys are around his feet, he notices it a little bit more. But in terms of his arm, when the Jets were in Green Bay in 2021 for joint practices, we got to watch Rodgers practice for a couple of days. It looks like that. And he won the MVP this year. His arm is still as good as it was then, maybe even better, he says. And I think there's a very good chance he's going to be very good for the Jets this year. And if he even if he's not good, if he has an okay season by Aaron Rodgers standards, he'll have one of the best seasons in Jets quarterback history. Because they haven't had a 4,000-yard passer since Joe Namath back when the schedule was only 14 games.
Andy, what's your general outlook? I know it's hard to trust the Jets, but the schedule, the talent, it has me very optimistic about them. Do you share those sentiments, and where do you ultimately think their record is?
Yeah, you look up and you see Breece Hall, you see Garrett Wilson, and it's hard to think like this team isn't going to be pretty good, especially when you look at the numbers they put up and the success they had with no quarterback. And then you look at what their defense is. I think it always threatens to get derailed, but I think they're going to be in the mix for the AFC East. I think they'll be right there with Buffalo. I think they're better than Miami, and I think there's a strong argument they're the most talented team in the division. I don't think they're a Super Bowl favorite, but they have an outside chance if everything goes well. And if their young players take a step forward, another step forward of being that kind of a team. So I think 11 wins. I think they will not win the AFC East, but I do think they'll win a playoff game. And I think that would be a good year for a franchise that has not had really anything to feel good about in a long time.
And that 11 wins would go over the season win total set at 9.5. That is juiced to the over. But Andy, when it comes to the expectations internally and from ownership, like what is a successful enough season to have a guy like Robert Saleh keep his job given the turmoil of the last couple of years? Is 11 wins and a playoff appearance enough in that sense?
I do. I think it's a weird spot because fans are so negative because it's been so long since the team was good. But also, like, that means the bar for success is, like, not that high. I think if they play well and win a playoff game, I think that's more than enough. I think even getting to the playoffs, again, I think it should be higher, like, considering the amount of talent on this team. But I do think there's this weird thing where, like, fans and everyone is so desperate and hungry for success. And if you can spin this year forward, like, hey, we took a step in the right direction and Aaron Rodgers still has it at 41 and he's going to be 41 for most of next year, you could see them keeping their jobs even, you know, if they fall short of maybe what they should be with their talent. So I think, and it's this weird spot. Like, if things go poorly early in the season, everyone is going to be ugly, toxic. Everyone's going to be out to get everyone. But if they have some success, even if it's a modest amount of success, like, I think it's going to be viewed as a success just because of the pain of the last decade and a half.
Andy, this is really, really great insight. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's Andy Vasquez. Follow him on X at Andy_Vasquez, doing great stuff as a Jets beat reporter for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. Do you agree in terms of the level of success for the Jets? 11-win season, playoffs, that's enough?
If he made the playoffs, I'd have a hard time seeing them dismiss a coach. If they break the drought, make the playoffs, I know you want a little more if you're the Jets, but it'd be hard to see him getting fired after making the playoffs. I agree.
I appreciated his honesty, though. Like, a lot of people have talked about the Jets as if it's Super Bowl or bust this year. Yeah. Things got to come together. But I thought that was a more leveled perspective, and I appreciate that again. Really appreciate Andy taking the time, especially just about 20 seconds after Aaron Rodgers got off the podium. We were able to get him on the show with us. Another great guest coming up next, Thor Nystrom, college football analyst for Fantasy Life. Get his thoughts on the AP Top 25 that came out yesterday for the preseason, and which odds-on favorite to make the CFP does he think might be a bet to miss?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're cruising on a Tuesday as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line alongside Will Hill today. Stormy Bonatoni with you. Going to get into a little college football here for the final half hour of the program. Really excited to have Thor Nystrom, who joins us on the Progressive Guest Line, college football analyst for Fantasy Life. Also does a great job as a draft analyst, which, Thor, I'm sorry, this is where I have to start, because we talked so much this summer about your excitement for J.J. McCarthy. You think that he really has the build to be a great pro. And then one preseason game and he's got a torn meniscus. How are you feeling?
I had to put myself together to get on the air with you guys. It's a tough scene in Minnesota this morning. And, you know, he so much progress during practices from the OTAs to the beginning of training camp. And then he just ripped up the Raiders on Saturday with the backup receivers on the Vikings. And so to get this news, I was out in Eagan last night. They had the night practice. It was like the last time when all the fans can come and like pack the facility and watch the practice. We found out J.J. McCarthy was not practicing like 30 minutes before. That was devastating enough. But then, of course, today's news is tough. And we'll see. They're going to go in there. They're going to find out whether it's short or long term. You know, like, they don't even know the severity of it. They just know that there's going to be a procedure. So crossing the fingers, hoping for the best. But yeah, J.J. McCarthy's chances now to start week one, which I thought were starting to look pretty good, they're now shot.
Or as a Vikings fan, I've waited 30 years for a quarterback. So what's another few months? No big deal here. But does this change your outlook here on the Vikings going forward?
Not really, to be honest. Like, the only thing is, I did think that JJ was starting to make a real argument to start week one. And mm-hmm. and obviously now it's going to be that plan that, you know, everyone has sort of bandied about of like Darnold, maybe through the bye week, maybe to midseason. Vikings have a tough early schedule. You have the easy opener, easy. I mean, the line's, you know, under three, but against the Giants. And then after that, it's a gauntlet until the bye. And you're playing that stretch without TJ Hockenson. It looks like now they might have Addison. The Addison suspension might come later. I think his court date's in October. But yeah, I mean, with this, now it's just pretty easy. Now you put it off till after the bye of when we're going to see JJ first. I don't think it affects this year's team very much. And long term, I certainly don't as well. But still, tough scene around here.
I'm outnumbered here by the Vikings fans. Will, where's your hat?
Right over there. I can see it from where I'm at. I want to put it on in solidarity, but you know, I've got to keep it professional.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, that hat I didn't even notice when we first welcomed you in, Thor, but there you Beautiful. Go. You came to represent nicely. Win total for the Minnesota Vikings this year set at 6.5. They're 10-1 in the division. Let's go to a little college football talk here. We saw the AP release their preseason top 25 yesterday. Your initial thoughts, any teams that you felt were maybe a little overrated or underrated, whether it comes to the poll, and obviously there are odds that are associated with a lot of that as well.
You know, this year, I don't know. I thought they did better than in a lot of years where there's teams that are artificially pumped up or, you know, what, like whatever, because of last year. I thought they did a decent job of acknowledging reality. Like, you see Michigan drops down to 9. I was looking at my power ratings. I have Michigan 9, mm-hmm. like the current iteration of the team. I also found it very interesting, the bullishness on Ole Miss, that Ole Miss comes in at 6 in that poll. But then I looked at my power rankings. I have them 7, right? So, like, I think they did a good job of the teams that needed to be knocked down, and appropriately so, and then the teams high up there. The top 3 of it, top 4 of it, actually top 5 now that I'm looking at it, is the exact same order as my power rankings. Wow. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama. So, I mean, it seems like the analytics and looking deeper into stuff, they're doing better with these first polls.
Or what's your favorite future? Because we were kicking it around before the show. They have awards for Doak Walker, Mackey Award, which I haven't seen in the past. That makes it fun. But awards, conference title, futures, to make the playoffs, take it whatever direction you want to go. What's your favorite future on the board?
Favorite long shot one is Texas State to make the CFP. We know that there's going to be one wow. G5 team that makes it. And if you win the Sun Belt, especially if you only have one loss, I think you're in play. Because Boise State's going to take at least one loss because they got to play at Oregon. They ain't winning that game. And then Liberty, Liberty plays by far the easiest schedule in the nation, like 134 out of 134. My metrics say it's not close. But if they go undefeated again, and I expect them to, you're going to have that argument. If you have a good, say, one loss G5 conference champion in another conference of, we let Liberty in last year after they went undefeated against that dog, you know what, schedule that they played, and they got hammered by Oregon. So that would open the door potentially for a team like Texas State. I think their schedule sets up very well as well. They get Arizona State and UTSA in San Marcos, and the Sun Belt slate looks manageable as well. I believe they duck Appalachian State. Yep. They'll have to play them in the conference title game. But maybe Appalachian State takes care of Liberty before then. We'll find out. But Texas State would be one of them for sure for me to win both the Sun Belt, but then also make the college football playoff.
I love that thought process, Thor. And as somebody who was on the sideline covering that Fiesta Bowl last year when Oregon pounded Liberty, like, we don't want to see that again. And I do think that the college football playoff selection committee has probably learned from that experience a little bit. And they are doing and talking about all the right things, like strength of schedule is important for them, and the way you win games is important. And for Liberty, the schedule they have is so easy. They're going to go through it. I don't think that you can commit just because they're undefeated, giving them that opportunity. So I love that. My pick was Boise State, but I respect the Texas State angle a ton. I want to go back to some of those high level teams in the poll real quickly, because our friend Tim Murray, who you of course know well here at the network, he had a really interesting tweet that he put up about the 7 college football teams that are favored to make the college football playoff. And if of these odds on favorites, if there was one that you might have interest in betting the opposite side, taking the plus money on them to miss the playoffs. So we're looking at Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ole Miss. I mean, I don't even hate throwing in Alabama because they're even money. any of those teams you think favored to make, you think could miss?
I would say of those teams, I would go Alabama if they're included. And then Ole Miss would probably be the other one from that list. Tim, I hate to jinx your team. I know you're listening out there. I think Notre Dame is making the CFP. I'm over on their win total. I think they're going to make the CFP. Notre Dame picked the perfect season to have a very easy schedule. Sometimes they have the gauntlet schedule. This year, not so much. I definitely think that they make it. And those top four teams, it's going to take an injury for them to not make it. And perhaps a couple for instance, Georgia, but Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, I don't know how they mess with how talented they are. You're just sort of parsing through the other teams, but Alabama's an easy fade. Year one of DeBoer. How does Jalen Milroe fit in with that system? Obviously, he likes to use his legs more, has the cannon for an arm, but the timing concepts and the accuracy in the intermediate range, anticipatory throws, some of those things, we haven't really seen those clubs in his bag yet. I know Kalen DeBoer is a miracle worker. It's going to have to be real quick, though, for Alabama to make the playoff with the schedule they're playing.
Or week one game you're most excited to watch, week one game you're most excited to bet. Take it whatever direction you want.
This probably wouldn't be for other people, but I'm excited to go to the Bank Stadium here with Minnesota hosting UNC, because I think UNC is going to be down. I'm out on UNC this year, and I think Gophers could sneakily be better than people think. So I'd be on the Gophers in that one. As far as other betting opportunities, I'm fading LSU early as well. I got to get the board up in front of me, but those are a couple quick ones.
We talked a lot on the show yesterday about Colorado, and I am curious, like, your thoughts genuinely on who this team, what this team can be this year.
Such a tough proposition. I want to believe, for Deion Sanders and his press conferences from last year. And I did more or less, but the stuff recently, you're starting to get the negative stench. Even if you're the believer, you have Deion being antagonistic during the press conferences. You wonder where his head is at. Obviously, some of those star players are a bit defiant. And then I think you're going to see some weird things with the depth chart as well. For instance, they shoved out Dylan Edwards left on his own volition, the four-star kid running back that they had gotten from Kansas. He transfers out to go to Kansas State. They bring in Dallin Hayden, a guy who was stuck behind a whole bunch of guys at Ohio State. And Dallin Hayden was expecting to be the starter. He hasn't been taking the first team reps there. This no-name kid, Charlie Offerdale, our receiving back, has been like, but it's not the only position where it's like a little head scratching. We'll see if Deion is the smartest guy in the room, or if this is the year where you have two top 10 NFL draft prospects with a team that is not going to make a bowl game. I think this one could go either way.
Thor, the analysis so good as always, and stay strong, buddy. JJ will get better.
Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you guys.
Thor Nystrom, everybody. Make sure you check out Fantasy Life and follow him on X at ThorKU. Preseason total for the Buffs sitting at 5.5. And there are a lot of people, by the way, that think Colorado could be on upset watch week one as an 8.5-point favorite against FCS North Dakota State, who's the number two FCS team in the country in their initial rankings. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Let's keep the college football talk rolling. This has been a long tease all show. We've been talking about some unique awards markets that are out there. Will Hill's going to give us his thoughts and initial leans in those markets. We'll be right back closing things out on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We were just saying in the break, this show has flown by. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Tuesday. Will Hill and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we close out this edition of the Lombardi Line. We're going to talk some college football awards here in a moment, but we did get some interesting NFL news over the last 10, 15 minutes or so. We talked at the top of the show about Malik Nabers and his low ankle sprain, Brian Daboll saying that he is day to day. Well, he has reportedly said there is no doubt he will be back for week one. So that has to make some Giants fans feel pretty good. Will, not so sure how that makes you feel though about that Vikings week one bet you liked.
Hey, Daniel Jones is still their quarterback. I like how he phrased it, though. No doubt. He must be a Lombardi line fan. No way or no doubt. He said no doubt. He's got to be.
Got to be. We got to get him on the show for that game show element.
Absolutely. By the way, I should have mentioned this earlier with Ayuk. If the trade does go through, and I think you and I are on the same page, kind of exhausted talking about the hypotheticals, what could happen, what might happen, what falls through, because it ends up just being, you know, filler for content where nothing's actually happening. If the trade goes through and he's on Pittsburgh, I think, you know, for fantasy drafts, fantasy football, you have to downgrade him. I'm not saying don't draft him entirely. But playing in bad weather, not playing in the Shanahan system, not playing with Purdy, you're got Russell Wilson and Fields, that hurts his value. So under for receiving yards, I think would be a play, and definitely have to downgrade him in terms of fantasy football for sure.
Let's just generally speaking, like I remember, obviously as a 49ers fan, I come at it from this perspective a little bit more, but Deebo Samuel, when he was going through his contract negotiation, Nick Bosa, when he was going through his, both later went on to say that that process impacting their offseason impacted their on-season play as well. And so you wonder if that's a factor regardless, right, that point. You're transitioning to a new state, a new team, getting acclimated. You also haven't been in the same football shape as everybody else who's been practicing together. So keep that in mind for sure. I love that's that concept. Point.
That's a great point. Dame Lillard said the same thing. I don't know if you saw it pretty recently where he said, hey, I had a really bad year. I wasn't working out because I wanted to get traded. I was afraid to get hurt. I wasn't in shape. So that's, I think, a really good point.
Also, while we're talking contract negotiations, interesting wrinkle from ESPN Bengals reporter Ben Baby. Ja'Marr Chase has been at practices on the sidelines throughout training camp this offseason. Today is the first day he is reportedly not out there. This was also retweeted from Adam Schefter. So two reputable reporters saying Ja'Marr Chase for the first time this training camp portion not out there on the field. And we all remember the press conference with Bengals team president Mike Brown, who kind of went back and forth on his feelings about Ja'Marr Chase contracts. They were going to bend over backwards to make sure that we give Ja'Marr Chase what he deserves, but also saying that they were unlikely to get a deal done. So I wonder where things sit with Ja'Marr Chase as it pertains to him getting on the field as well.
And can they really bend over? Like, how do you bend over backwards? Bending over backwards seems like it's just physically impossible. Yeah, I don't know what to make of it.
I don't know. Here in Las Vegas, I've seen a lot of Cirque du Soleil. So, you know, they can do it.
I wasn't sure which direction you were going. I'm glad you went that direction, though. It seems like we've had a newsy sort of cycle here with Neighbors and Gibbs, Ayuk, and now Chase. So important to keep an eye on, especially fantasy football drafts coming. You're making your season-long futures, props, all that stuff. It's good to know what the information is in terms of, like, hey, you want to be careful about firing on this stuff, especially if you're playing futures. Like, if you bet McCarthy rookie of the year, you're already done. So it's not that bad of a policy to say, hey, if I'm going to bet futures awards, especially the awards, I'm just going to make sure my guy's there at week one. If he gets hurt in the middle of the season, part of doing business, I don't want to lose my guy in the preseason.
That's why you made fun of me for my Survivor talk, how I said I'm just waiting to see who's healthy first and foremost. But no, judge away, Will. Okay, I see you. Let's shift gears here, last few minutes of the show, get back to college football. We have been teasing it all show long that we're going to talk college football awards markets. There are some unique props that are available out there, which, by the way, always a good time as well to remind everybody that our college football betting guide is out and available now. Plenty of prop market breakdowns. If you're looking at season win totals, expectations for teams, roster turnover, head coaches that have changed, this is the place to go, VSiN.com/subscribe. Get that guide. You also get the NFL betting guide. You get everything VSiN has to offer. VSiN Pro Access from now through the Super Bowl, only $175. If you haven't done it, you absolutely need to. Now is the time. But let's get into some of those. Which awards markets are available? Which ones kind of piqued your interest? Had you raising an eyebrow a little bit you thought were nice? What did you think?
Again, the guide's massively, massively underpriced, extremely valuable. You will get it. You will love it. Nobody's going to be unhappy that they bought it. That being said, these awards I can't remember seeing in past years. And look, bettors, we like to complain about books, and a lot of times it's justified, but give them credit. If you build it, they will come. You put out markets on stuff. It gives people not just content, but interesting ways to attack different beliefs, different opinions. And these awards, Doak, Walker, the Mackey Award, the Biletnikoff for best receiver. I think these are a lot of fun. And I'm curious if you have any opinions on these. I will start with the Mackey Award for best tight end. I'll go RJ Maryland of SMU, a team you and I are both high on. I bet SMU to win the ACC. You look at the schedule, they don't have to play Clemson, Miami, Virginia Tech, NC State. They play Florida State, but it's at home. And RJ Maryland, the son of Russell Maryland, top 10 pick for the Cowboys, Miami Hurricane. RJ Maryland, 6'4", 240, track star in high school. He had 7 touchdowns last year as a tight end, tied for the most in the country as a tight end. I think with that schedule, they're going to be on the map. I think he's an NFL level player. You're getting like 22 to 1, 25 to 1 in that range. I think that's a good bet. The Doak Walker Award for Oregon, the Oregon running back, Jordan James, I think he's around that same price, 25 to 1. He averaged over 7 yards a carry last year, 11 touchdowns and just 100 carries. He's an explosive player. That's a guy that I bet. Again, same price range, 25 to 1. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts on those markets, those players, or anything else. Because, again, these are a lot of fun to a bet. And if you build it, they will come. These are great markets. Yeah,
that's an interesting pick for Doak Walker. Obviously, Ollie Gordon, a rightful favorite for everything that he accomplished, despite missing the first handful of games last year for Oklahoma State to go on the run that he did. He's the plus 340 favorite there. I instantly, and it's obviously not the same odds as your pick, but I instantly gravitated to Ashton Jeanty of Boise State at plus 750, averaged 113 yards per game last year, led the nation in yards from scrimmage, had 19 total touchdowns. I feel like he is poised for a really big year. And like we talked about with SMU being a team I'm high on, Boise State is another team that I'm very high on. I did like, by the way, Thor's conversation, bringing up Texas State That is not a team that was on my radar truly at all for that spot. Really, I think App State gets most of the attention in the Sun Belt, especially since Troy's head coach moved on to Tulane this past offseason, John Summerall. So Texas State was an intriguing pick there. Are there any other like G5 teams that you've really looked at?
That one is in my account. I have them to win the conference. I have them to make the playoffs. I had Brad Powers on my podcast, College Football Handicapper, maybe 2 months ago, and he talked about Texas State to make the playoffs. I don't think he went into detail about it, and I respect him enough where I looked for it, couldn't find it. And then I started to really hone in on my prep and do these conferences, do the smaller conferences, and they stuck out because I see why I liked them. Because you look at the coach, G.J. Kinney, former, let's say, NFL player, but he bounced around training camps, bounced around different leagues. He is a stud. He's young. He's an innovative offensive mind. He put everybody on notice last year. Remember, they scored a ton of points against Baylor and shocked Baylor in week one early last year. He is not going to be at Texas State long because he is a very good offensive mind. They're good on both sides of the ball, and the schedule is conducive to them having a good season just because most of their swing games, most of their tough games, they do get in their building. So you can get them. I think Circa had them 12 to 1. That's probably cutting it short. Another book had them 15, 16 to 1. The secret's sort of out on them. And that's the thing with college. When you are this late to the process, and we talked about it with the NFL, hey, wait as long as possible to make sure your guy doesn't get hurt. But with teams and with over-under wins and all these different things, the good stuff kind of gets gobbled up where these markets mature. So if, hey, there's a season win total you really like and this number's off, those off numbers don't last as long, which is the flip side.
So you mentioned Mackey and Doak Walker. Was there anything in the Biletnikoff Awards market that intrigued you?
This is an interesting one.
I think the best receiver, by the way, in college football. Yes. I just want to make sure I say that for our audience.
Trey Harris, Ole Miss, 20 to 1. He's a guy, 1,000 yards last year, 135 yards in the bowl game against Penn State, had a breakout performance. And that's a team, we talked about them earlier, their schedule is so friendly early with these cupcakes, Furman, Middle Tennessee State, Georgia Southern, Wake, where, let's face it, they have a coach. He likes to put the cherry on top, put that exclamation point there when he's got a big lead. He's not afraid to stick another one in the end zone. They're going to have a good offense. They're going to score a ton of points. He's an explosive player, over 18 yards per catch last year. He can get 20 to 1. I think that's a pretty good one. If I gave you a $100 free bet on any of these, receiver, award, tight end, Doak Walker, whatever it is, where would you go? Where would you put your fake money?
I hate this question because I would probably want to spread it around a little bit too. I think it's interesting that Oregon has two of the top four receivers in this market because like they're going to be sharing the wealth so much. I don't know if one of them will stand out that much. I know producer Elliot would say lay it all on Luther Burden because he is Mizzou made and very happy. Maybe you go Ohio State. I mean, Carson Beck is right up there. I don't know. Don't ask me to do this.
You lose your money. You just gave away. I gave you a free roll and you just gave it.
You know
back.
What? I'm making a donation to DraftKings or Circa or whatever it is today. Apparently I have to think this through a little bit more. I don't like just saying, let me throw money on something. You know what? I like Arizona. Let's go T-Mac. I'm just doing it. We're going T-Mac. We're going a short shot. Judge me all you want, but he's got Noah Fifita, one of the better quarterbacks, I think, in college football, particularly the Big 12. I'm going T-Mac. All right, I made a pick. There you go. I'm not useless after all. Thank you for filling in today, Will. We appreciate you.
Always fun. Thank you.
All right, come join us tomorrow on the Lombardi Line. Same time, same place. Coming up next, you got Patrick Maher and the Sharp Money Crew.